This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? Everything good? You okay? Now, I was thinking, I kind of ask that every week, how are you? And I don't mean it to sound like trite or unreal. I genuinely want to ask how you are. I don't know. How the devil are you has turned into some sort of catchphrase. I don't know if I like it anymore. I don't want it to sound sort of disingenuous. But I genuinely want to know, how are you? Because this is a two-way thing. You subscribe to this podcast. We talk. You listen. You respond. I know we have a good relationship on social media. We always respond to you when we can, and on the email too. So it's a two-way thing. So how are you? Is everything good? This is Thursday. It's the podcast. I'm Craig Parkinson, and if you're asking or wondering, I'm very good. I'm a bit tired. Actually, I'm recording this intro very late on a Wednesday night. And things have been a bit hectic since we announced that the good doctor, Jodie Whittaker, is joining us today. We're made up. We're thrilled that she's come on because she's brilliant and she's a top, top laugh. We'll get to that in a second. But look, I'm not going to do a massive long intro this week because I know all you want to do is get to the natter. But you know, right, that we do this from our own pockets and our hearts. But we have the Patreon site. I'm not going to plug it. You know what it is. But there's some special people that I really want to shout out because these people go above and beyond. They donate over $10 a month to the podcast. For the 4 free podcasts they get a month, they donate over $10. So listen up. Dancia King, you are a legend. Thank you. Emma Hobson, welcome. What you do makes everything worthwhile. Georgina Tripp, thank you. We love you. Big John Griffin, I do not want an arm wrestle contest with you because I know you'd win. Kevin Proctor, you've been there since the start. Bless you, man. Matthew Egan, welcome. Mo Mashati, you are new to the podcast, but you are a loyal listener and your responses on social media are much appreciated. Big Nev Pierce in Bristol. Come on, fella. He's listening to this. He's got his two-shot pod badge on. Have you got a two-shot pod badge? No? Work out how to get one. You want to be in the club. Judith McSpadden, bless your cotton socks. Adrian Troop, thank you, brother. Thank you. And also thanks for all your messages during Sean's podcast. Much appreciated. Peter Fletcher, bless you, my friend. Thank you. Sally Sanchez, my God, that is a great name. Svetlana Guziva, am I doing that right? Svetlana Guziva, thank you so much for the support. It means so much. Tara Mullock, come on. This is brilliant for you. Thank you, thank you. I appreciate it. Sara Figueredo. We had this last time, Sara. Sara Figueredo. I hope I'm saying that right. And it's not slightly offensive in any way, me doing that stupid accent. So bless you. Thank you to all the massive patron super backers doing what we do with no sponsors and, you know, no support means that this podcast is as much yours as it is ours because you help it. You help fund it. You help run it. And the love and financial support does not go unnoticed. So I want to let you know that. Enough of this waffle, Craig. What are you doing? Get to Doctor Who, Jodie Whittaker. Well, of course I can. I'm going to do that now. So how did this all happen? Well, I got an email from somebody from the BBC and they were talking about the podcast. And I said, oh, well, that's very kind. Thanks very much. I don't really have people on who asked to come on. Anyway, Jodie wants to come on and I'm so pleased that she did because I'd never met her. Well, no, I say I'd never met her before. I had met her once, but it was very, very brief. And to sit down with somebody for an hour or an hour and a half or whatever it is a really big deal because it's a big conversation between two people. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know. So, yeah, I'm always worried when that happens, when people come on. But it's exciting as well because, yeah, it's just exciting. If you've done a podcast, you'll know. If you've had 2-hour conversations with people, you'll know. I'm rambling. This is ridiculous. Get on with it, Craig. Get on with it. Okay, so we met up with Jodie at the Bunker in Soho, Maison Bateau, Greek Street. Go get your cakes. Not a sponsor, but they look after us. And yeah, we started off by talking about something that's very close to myself and Jodie's heart and stomach. Food. This is the Two Shot Podcast, episode 57, with Jodie Whittaker. Enjoy.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
I can eat it at the end as a reward.
It's not an exam. Do you never go for cream, jam?
Clot of cream.
Never it's go too, for...
I won't pick it. I'd eat it.
You can do a Cornish vibe.
No, I won't pick it.
But if it was there, you'd eat it?
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing that you could put in front of me that I wouldn't eat.
Really?
Unless it was... I couldn't eat like a bug. I've tried that before. Like when I went backpacking in Thailand, we ate bugs. And I... would like, you know, in the street markets and stuff. And... I mean, I think I went, there, that was it. But anything, like, I love steak tartare, love oysters, I'll eat anything new. I'll always try it. There'll be stuff I don't like, but I'll always try it. There isn't a texture or anything that I won't eat.
I was talking about having squirrel the other day to my son, because there was a squirrel crossing the road and I had to slow down not to kill it.
Have you ever seen Winter's Bone?
Yeah.
I think she skins one, don't she?
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I'm not sure about that. But I've had roasted squirrel.
Have you?
I said, oh, let's go here for my birthday. And it was just me and Sue. It was just very quiet. I don't really like birthday parties. I get a bit funny about birthdays full stop. Not crowds, just sort of the pressure.
Yeah.
I was talking to Carl Pilkinson about surprise birthday parties the other week and going...
I'm a control freak. I'd want to organise mine.
Yeah, but because I'm a control freak, I would want to make sure that everybody's having a good time, so therefore I wouldn't relax.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I just went, and then there was a squirrel on the menu, so I had roasted squirrel. I really liked it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that. Were it chewy?
It was like, the only thing, it's like wild rabbit. So it's like deep sort of intense flavour, but not a lot of meat on there. You want something else after it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, before...
So, a wasted meal.
No, because then I can go... Essentially, but then I can what's one of the strangest things you've had? I said, well, I've had roasted squirrel. Have you? You've had roasted squirrel? Yeah, it's fine.
I've sea cucumber.
I've never had that.
I was in Rarotonga for Christmas when I was 18. I went backpacking for a year. And that's where I ended up for Christmas. And it was on Christmas Day, someone, like, cooked it. As part of like the meal on Christmas Day,
and
it made a very funny email back to my mum. Better than what you cook.
You've had fermented egg, you know, like
the one in the pub.
That's a pickled egg.
Oh, pickled egg. No.
You're from Yorkshire. You should know about pickled eggs. You know, fermented eggs, like it's like, I think they like bury it and it goes black.
No, I'd try
Asian.
It though.
Would you?
Oh, definitely.
Have you ever had... Oh, God, it's not a podcast about food, really.
I know, but that'd be my dream. I'm going to start a podcast about food.
You should. Are you a good cook?
No, but I'm a very good...
Eater.
I'm a very good person to cook for because I'm very gushy. So I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding? And I'm really emotional about it. The amount of times I've been in a restaurant and got really overwhelmed by how amazing something is. Or if someone cooks at a dinner party, I'm just like, I can't believe you made that because I'm crap.
What about if it's awful? Are you quite polite and go?
Yeah, I think I'm too polite. If it's awful, what's awful though? It'd have to be really bad, wouldn't it? There's always something you like.
Yeah, just take the positive out of the meal.
Yeah,
we were talking actually before I met you outside, and we were talking about what destroys a breakfast.
What does destroy breakfast?
I think boiled tin tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd eat them, but I wouldn't pick them.
I wouldn't eat them. I wouldn't eat anything on that plate because. A sea of tomato juice is the undercurrent to your sausage and your bacon and your soggy toast. So therefore, all ruined for me.
Would you have ketchup?
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. People are snobby about that.
No, but definitely have ketchup. But the ketchup can be placed in a certain part of the plate, so therefore it's not...
You might have OCD.
Oh, what do you mean? I just said I was a control freak. You're talking about everything about my breakfast. That's why I'm one person that wants to cook. I'm not sure I like people cooking for me that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, if I go to a restaurant, it's a different thing. How's your tea? Is it rotten?
Yeah, it's all right. I'm trying to put it down quietly like I'm doing a radio play.
It's all right. We'll just do this.
You know, like turning the page.
Just do that.
Thanks. I'm drinking a lovely cup of red bush tea. My favourite.
And maybe there's a scone on the table.
And a scone. Pronounced scone. Scone, if you're posh.
Scone if you're Lancashire.
Oh, is it? I thought scone was posh.
No, scone is posh.
Well, scone is not.
Scone is different.
So, yeah, I'm having that, so I'm trying to eat that as well.
Me and Griff were in Yorkshire last week.
Doing this?
Yeah.
With
who? We travel everywhere. A poet called J.B. Barrington.
Cool.
It's very funny. Very not safe for work, wasn't it? I mean, it was lots of stories and swearing. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And we were going through certain parts. We were in East or West Riding?
We're in East
Riding. And the place was called, Griff, do you remember? Shipton Thorpe, right. And Griff went, only in Yorkshire would these places be called that. If you put that in Lancashire, it just wouldn't work. Shipton Thorpe. Do you know
that's it? No, but it just sounds like I'm from. I'm from Skelmanthorpe.
Skelmanthorpe, exactly. Skelmanthorpe, exactly. You would only get that there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, our village is called Shat.
Shat.
It genuinely is. So, like, so there's Shat Taxi. There's like,
there isn't a Shat Taxi.
There is, and it picked it when he told me and my husband from train station when we first started dating. And he was like, I'm sorry, what is that? That's a taxi, babe. Because back in... And this is probably wrong. My brother told me this, so I'm blaming my brother if this is wrong. But basically, I think back in like the 1800s, there was a quarry, and the thing that they did was shatter the slate.
Right.
So you were a shatterer. You were a shatter. And if you lived there, you were a shatter. So if I'm up north sometimes and I'm at home, someone say, oh, you're Shat lass, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, I'm from Shat. And I don't even hear it because
no.
I'm from Shat.
Yeah.
But when someone else goes, I'm sorry, what? What? And there's like things are named after it. There's like Shat Pizza.
Is there a Shat Pizza? Like,
there's like was a village. So it's like, but it's the obvious nickname of the place.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the village sign is Skelmanthorpe, but it is called Shat. Like to anyone local. Like, but local is in like a 10-mile radius. Like, because it's, you know, if you play cricket, like, it's all cricket, isn't it?
Yeah.
So all local teams, it's like, oh, we're playing Shat this weekend.
Yeah.
But to me, that doesn't sound weird.
No, but for outsiders who don't, the connotations are completely different.
Yes, it is, yes.
How was it growing up there?
It was brilliant. I was always... I've wanted to live in London my entire life. And I think I have this weird thing where I think I was born with, like, itchy feet, because my mum and dad were brought up in neighbouring villages. So my dad's from the next village called Clayton West. My mum's from Cumberworth, which is, like, over the hill. Mm. So it's all, like, 3 mile radius.
Yeah.
My mum always wanted to live away. And from being...
What, out of Yorkshire?
Yeah, always from being, like, 15, 16... She left school at 16, so she lived away. She lived in London, she lived in Denmark, she lived in Oxford, she did all this, and she was very nomadic, and then came back, already knew my dad, then they got together and had me and my brother. So I would say there's my dad and my brother who have always lived there, never moved away and love it, and there is me who loves it and will probably end up back there at some point.
But
I have to do what my mum did and do that. Because I can remember going on a school trip to London when I think we're at middle school. So we have a different school system. So it's like first, middle and high. So middle is year 6 to year 8. And I think we came down to London around there. And I remember going to Covent Garden and there was someone singing in the cafe, you know, the opera cafe.
Yeah.
And I wanted to cry. I just thought it was the most amazing place I'd ever been.
I've never seen anything like
that.
Well,
yeah, because it's so busy.
Yeah.
There's everyone from everywhere. And there isn't that in a Yorkshire village.
No.
It's not a criticism, but to me, it's like, I love London so much. I love Yorkshire in hindsight because I had the most amazing upbringing. But I was spending that upbringing going, am I old enough yet? Am I old enough yet?
Really?
Can I drive? Can I leave now? Can I leave? And I left, like, the age that I was allowed to leave. But I only had, I suppose, the confidence and the desire to do it all because my childhood there had been so lovely and fun. So I'd had, like, you know, I'd had a really great childhood. So then going off was an adventure. I wasn't running away from something. I was going to kind of come back and be able to go... You never guess what.
Because, you know, you'd always have that, though.
And also now, I'm just, like, really jealous of all my friends who don't rent and, you know, have really amazing lifestyles in these, like, actual homes. Because you don't live in London now, do you?
No,
so
no.
It's like there is that about it and space and countryside. And, you know, my voice fits there more than it does here. But it's weird to me now when people go, oh, you're from Yorkshire, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. But to me, I live in, like, London is home.
Yeah.
And I obviously don't sound like it should be.
but you've obviously done a lot of growing up in London.
Yeah, because I came here when I was 20. I was brought up in my family home that I've lived in my entire life. I think we moved once when I was about 3, so I can't remember it. My mum and dad, my brother.
What did your mum and dad do?
I think I accidentally once said in an interview when I was really young that my mum was a nurse, but she was a nurse in, like, the 70s. And so whenever there is an interview, her mother's a nurse. And I'm like, I won't dare put her on a ward now. I mean, I think it was about 1975. But I think at some point I've, like, said in an interview that... Another one, my dad was fuming. This really made me laugh. So he has his own business, and it's a business for companies that supplies and fits protective film for kind of, you know, like skyscrapers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And her dad runs a window shop.
Good
thing. I just, like, undermined his entire career. Not to suggest that is bad. It was just that my dad's career was this, you know, thing that he built up and built up and built up, and I just don't describe it very well. I also can't describe it as a grown-up. I can only describe it in a way that you were at school and someone said, what does your dad do?
Yeah.
He puts that sticky stuff on glass and he doesn't do it. He's never done it. I don't even know if his company do it. I just know it's something to do with that. I'm awful.
But how many times did you get asked, though?
Well, I get asked all the time, so I think I just go, like... I tried to make myself sound really posh. I was like, he's a CEO. is a sayer. And my mum was a stay-at-home mum my entire childhood. And once we got to school age, she then started to work. She's always worked with children. So from being a nanny to, you know, paediatrics to all this, she's always wanted to work with children. So everything she's always done has been, you know, kind of childminding and working at schools, like as a... And, I think they're now called TAs when she did it like an NTA, non-teaching assistant thing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the terms. But, yeah, so she's always done stuff like that. But it was very much I would come out of school very hyperactive and have a long walk home going... Blah, 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 and just was very lucky because I was listened to. I was in that position where someone was really interested in my random shit and smear on a page. And then I was going, frame it, Mum, frame it. And she would.
This is art.
Yeah, this is art. Might be worth something now. She's regretting that clear out.
She should come round my house. It's just all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too painful to throw away.
I can't throw that stuff away. I love all that stuff.
This sounds awful. Even
the shit ones.
Even the crap, because also it's just an expression of something. But my dad's mum, when she passed away, I absolutely adored my grandma Greta. She was batty, an ace, and she was from North Finchley. Proper Cockney, and even in her like days, at, like, you know, she died in her like mid 80s, I think. But even right at the end, when she was very ill, she still did a full Cupid's bow lipstick. But because she was a bit old, it'd get a bit wonky. And she did lipstick crosses on her cheeks and rub them in. So she had like full, and she would have beehived for as long as possible if she could have done, but you know, but she still curled. Everything about her was. She was a landlady, so my dad was brought up in pub. So
right.
my dad's thing is like my grandparents randomly, my dad's parents ran the pub at Breton College.
Right.
During the 70s. So sometimes I work with people and I'll like say, oh, where did you go? And they went to Breton College. I was like, I bet you never got my granddad. They're like, your granddad were miserable. I think you're a grumpy bugger. Your grandma were lovely. I never met him. So my grandma were just, and she were absolutely amazing. But when she died, this sounds awful in this context because we loved her and obviously cried, but me and my dad went through all the stuff absolutely pissing ourselves because she saved, like, I'd like cut some out and she'd write a full description. Jodie, age 4 and a half, and the date I did it and what it was supposed to be, and it were all saved. And I was like, oh my God. And it was just, my dad was like, absolute crap. I mean, it's crap. Like, even at the time, there will have been a better one to keep. It will have been options.
Yeah.
Like, I could have done a whole, like, piece of art, and she kept, like, even the bits she were trying to put in the bin.
Oh, bless her.
So I think... I'm not from an acting family at all, but I'm from a family of enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So we were really celebrated, probably to my detriment because I have arrogance that it's just, it's not worthy of my talent. I think I can do things that I can't do.
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, I bound into everything going, yeah, I could do that. But then it's like...
But what? That's not a negative?
I
that's
don't think
positive.
It's a negative. Well, until you've bloody fallen out of a plane and you're like, nope.
I wouldn't go to that extent. I'm wicked parachute jumper.
I'm really competitive, but I'm also been told it's like, well, if you give it a go, you'll probably be able to do it.
And but even if like, you can't, it's all right to fail, because then you'll learn.
But that's my... So that's essentially how I got into it, because I was never told this, what I wanted to do wasn't a proper job, or that I needed a real direction, or I needed to have security. None of those things. It was, this is what I want to do. I want to be in Goonies. And people are in Goonies, yeah. So it's obviously a job.
It can
because
be done.
There's grown-ups in it, so yeah. It's obviously not just for kids. So if I can do that, I want to do that. And that was it. And so there's no decision.
And that was supported like, at school.
It wasn't a decision. It was just, I said I've always... There was never a thing. I wasn't very good at a lot of subjects and I was really good in drama and I've got a big enough ego to need to be at the top of at least one class.
Yeah.
And I was only the top of one class. So, yeah. And I wasn't even the top. I was in a really great year. There were loads of us. But that was the only thing I did. I didn't go out of school drama clubs. I didn't want to go to drama school at 18. I wanted to go backpacking for a year. I wanted to then work. And then I went at 20. But I had this plan from being really young. I was going to go backpacking at 18. I was going to come back, I was going to apply to drama school and I was going to go at 20. And that's what happened. And I'm a jammy Look, watch it. Have you ever read The Man Who Has All the Luck, the Arthur Miller play?
No.
I'd never read it because it's really unusual, but I auditioned for it and didn't get it. When I was coming out of drama school, Andy Buchan was the lead in that, actually. We talked about it afterwards. And that play scares me because I'm really jammy. And it's just a guy who's aware he's really lucky and then he starts to kind of jinx his own looks. He's so apparent. That's a terrible description. That's like, if anyone's doing their GCSEs, do not do this. But I think, I did audition for it years ago. I think it's like, basically, you're your own fate. You provide, because you worry about being lucky that you then invite in the bad things to happen, don't you?
Yeah.
Because...
Do you worry about that? Notes.
Well, I just... Yeah, I mean... Well, no, because life then...
Takes over.
Is, well, life is up and down.
Yeah.
When you're an adult.
Yeah.
So you do take the shit and the good. So it's like there isn't... It balances out enough to know you're not that jammy. But then we work. I wouldn't be sat here...
Exactly.
..if I wasn't... A bit jammy.
Well, you might have been, you don't know.
Well, yeah. But I do think with those lot, there's a lot of talent involved, but we know loads of really talented actors,
yeah,
and the opportunities aren't always there to them. And I do think there's so much, there is a lot of right time, right place. There's a lot of luck in
loads.
Who you meet. There's things you can take credit for, and you absolutely should, and I do. And rightly or wrongly take credit for things, but I do think there is luck.
Well, I read the other day, I was going through...
Please talk for a little bit so I can have some skin.
Yeah, no, I'll talk for a bit, don't worry.
Thanks.
No, not that people want to hear me talk. But because when we put our episodes out, they always go out on a Thursday. And
good to know.
This is a Friday. So yesterday, at the night time, I was always
going
through...
So this is going out next Thursday?
No, go out, I don't know when it goes out. When? Oh, no, I do know when it goes out. But
right, cool.
It's out now. We're listening to it. But someone had put on social media, I don't know if it was on our feed or something, and they said, if you work really hard, then you create your luck, or words to that effect. And it was like going, well, if you work really hard, then you'll get the luck. I know loads of people that work really hard and
really
who are absolutely brilliant, and they've got shit all luck.
Yeah.
So and I was dying to... But the thing is, I never get onto anything because Griff tells me never to get into any sort of debate or anything on social media.
Not on it for that reason.
But
because I just couldn't
the thing
hold
is,
back, I don't think.
Because I was on it for a bit and then I was... advised to come off it a few years ago, I'll tell you.
That's great. Off air.
But me and Griff started the podcast, we thought, well, how do we do it? We've got to do it by social media. And it's just a way of connecting. So I think if you're doing it from a business point of view, like which we are, it does work. But we don't get into any sort of conflicts on it. But I did want to go, God, that you're sending out the wrong message there, because the people I know, and I'm sure the people that you know, work so fucking hard,
so
and they never get a break
well,
at all.
Yeah, and also it's just like, well, they'd have got it if they'd have gone up for it.
Yeah,
they didn't even get seen.
Mm.
So like, I can be really proud of myself for thinking, oh, I've gone into a room and I've got a job, and I feel really proud of myself for being able to step up to the plate. But I've been put in the room in the first place.
Exactly.
So I'm already jammy because there's about, you know, however many of us that aren't even in that seven that get seen in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think it is weird, isn't it? I also find the one like, yeah, made it. What does that mean?
Well, it's like...
It's so weird, and it's like, yeah, you can make it too. Make it. Like, life's long. Hold off. Hold off with your bold statements.
I always find people who, like, finish the scene when you're filming and they'll turn to somebody else and go, smashed it. Oh man.
I have never worked with someone who's done that. I can't wait.
You're so lucky.
I can't wait for that.
Speak to Tony
Bitts. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, it's that. But it's like, what do you mean? That's not your job to do that. Just
no, I know.
Don't be self-congratulating. I just think it's like, don't run to the monitor.
But there is a fine line though, isn't there, of being like too British. In kind of like never kind of ever feeling like, because sometimes what I find out is when you really, you see someone on stage or you've seen a film or something and you go up to somebody, which I can very often do because I've got boundary issues and things like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I thought you were absolutely amazing. And because we are built the way we are, you don't always believe it in yourself, but then by, oh, I thought I was terrible in that. It's like, oh, let me think you were good.
Yeah, don't also, say
like,
it.
Because that's
yeah.
the difficulty then is like we do have this, there's a real fine line in there between going, yeah, no, I think I'm really good in it.
Well, then you're at the arrogance level.
Well, yeah.
But you don't want to be right at the other end of the spectrum of going, oh, really, I was terrible, I can't really do this.
But I think it's sad, isn't it, that we are in an industry where we very rarely can go, yeah, I think I did well in that.
Without,
I think without sense, because you just don't, do you? Because everything you watch, there's like however many million moments that you go, oh, I don't, why did you pick that take?
Yeah, but that's out of your control, isn't it?
Or why did I do that in that take? Why to did give no them
one,
that option?
Why did no one tell me?
I'm not. Does my face look like that?
I think that about my voice. Oh, God, that's why I never listen to these back.
Oh, it would be weird if you did listen to him, Matt, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm eating, that's why my voice sounds weird.
All right, don't worry. Still your voice always sounds weird. Without the scone.
Northern.
What did you get, even though that was your plan, from the gap year?
Yeah.
Gap year, is that what they call it?
Yeah. Well, it were a gap.
Yeah.
And it were a year.
Did you go by yourself?
Yes, it were a funny one. So I'd start. My mum knew that I'd started saving. That sounds hilarious.
I'm trying to even get it off, Mike. They know it happens. It's fine. My mum listened to it. She went, "What was that noise in between?" I was just on the thing. So it gets me through it.
Gets you through the boredom of listening to me talk about myself.
Never. That's the thing, though. Genuinely, he'll vouch for this. I'm never bored doing this.
I find it absolutely fascinating.
I feel like I'm more alive doing this than possibly anything I've ever done.
Oh, that's ace.
Because it is what it is. If we went back 20 minutes now and go, all right, let's talk about that again, I can't tell you because it was in that moment and that's what makes it pure and it's a conversation. It's not like a Q&A or it's some sort of journalist. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's this and you can't.
And it does, even though there's a mic, it feels like a chat.
Well, exactly. When whenever anybody says that, it's like the biggest compliment in the world because that's always what I wanted it to be, you know? Anyway, let's get back. Where are we, Gabby?
Oh, yeah, so...
See, I told you, we can't remember 2 minutes, let alone 20.
So my... So I always had a job, like, from being probably 12 or 13. It was a big thing. My mum and dad really wanted us to have Saturday jobs, weekend jobs, you know, like washing up in a cafe, you know, to...
You have a paper round?
You are?
Do you have a paper round?
No, I'm scared of dark. I'm 36. I wouldn't do it now. Absolutely no way. I also watched films I shouldn't have watched from a very young age, horror-y films that I'm just like, there's no way I'd be wandering streets.
The first two films we watched at my house when my dad got the video player.
Gone.
The Deer Hunter.
Why?
And Nightmare on Elm Street.
Awful, awful.
On Betamax.
Freddy Krueger's
horrible.
The worst thing that can happen.
Awful.
To any 80s person.
Do you know what I thought when I was really young? Even though I knew it was a horror film, I went, but that could happen in real life because somebody could go and kill children.
What? Yeah. But
that's because I was fucking traumatised by it.
But it is so, but like, even now though, because there are some films that, like The Babadook, Jesus
that
Christ.
That was terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. I watched that at a stupid time of night. But even that, I'm like, there's a boom. There's a clapper loader. It's gone out of focus.
It's all make-believe.
Like, not on thing, but I just think they've had to go again for that take because maybe the one before went out of focus. So I have to just continually think there's
take
a crowd
of
people
of
sat around because I am I'm lucky. Even though I'm in this job, I can sit and watch a film and I don't. Judge. I can be in the film.
Right.
Well, I'll judge it because I'm an arsehole.
But sometimes you have to take yourself out of it if it's a horror film.
I have to do that if it's a horror because I just need to kind of send them, like, the ridiculous overreaction of, like, oh, my God. But I can't do it if it's emotional. I can't do it. Like, I've just gone. You know, when it's teary, you're just like, well, there could be a boom operator, whatever. They're all crying because I am a mess. But so we had to have, like, jobs when we were younger and which were really good and really fun. And as a very kind of sociable kid, I loved it. But I started saving then. And so I started putting my pocket money aside.
For the plan,
Yeah, but my dad didn't know that. My mum knew. So she, like, set me up a little, what are they called? Little, you know, kids' bank accounts.
Yeah, what?
Like a little savers account, aren't they, when you're young?
Like mini savers or something.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called. They had, like, a funny, like,
Wasn't the NatWest for the pigs, was it?
No, it wasn't a pig one. Can't remember what bank. I'm not plugging a bank.
Right, we'll bleep that out.
Yeah.
Although,
but yes, yeah, so,
those pigs are very expensive now. You can't get hold of them, slip them on eBay. Kept, £500 a piece, damn pot pigs.
I might have one of them.
Dig it out, kid. There's your...
I collected pigs.
Really?
Yeah, it was my collection when I was a kid. I bet I've got one of them. Mm.
Get that on
I can't
eBay.
Remember what it called. But I'd like, my mum used to put, like, what, my wage aside or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, lucky, like, my mum and dad were comfortable, so we did, you know, nice stuff. So my pocket money were just for me to be frivolous and do them on swaps with stickers, WWF stickers.
You weren't doing wrestling stickers.
I absolutely loved it. And now, like, my godsons and nieces got into their match attack stickers and love, like, just... And I really remember that feeling of being like, oh, have you got The Undertaker? I want The Undertaker. I've already, oh, what can I give you this one? I've got British Bulldog, I've got two British Bulldogs. You know, like,
no one wants two British Bulldogs.
Like, so excited about my swapsies. And, but that was it. That was kind of as exciting as I got. And I wasn't cool, so I wasn't into clothes or anything. I liked my music, but I just nicked my cassettes off my brother. But, I had all these like jobs that I was saving. And then at 16 or 17, I said to my dad at 18, please, can I go backpacking for a year? And, you know, basically just getting his head around that I'll want to go. And I had a mate, Emma, who really wanted to come. And the plan was that we were always going to go together. And he said, I think I was about 16, 17, and he said, right, if you start saving, I'll double whatever you save. And I went, okay. And I was like, so me and my mum didn't tell him. So then, on my 18th birthday, I had to show him my bank statement. The fucking hell are you at? What jobs you had? I was like, I've been saying since I was 30. And he was just absolutely devastated. But because he's a very, like, true to his, he's a, you know, he's a business, he's a, like, 80s businessman. So yeah. You shake hand, it means it's
done,
it's
deal.
Role, but yeah. So for him, it was like he had to do it, and he was absolutely devastated because I'd save, man. Our typical Yorkshire, we're putting it all aside, saving everything. And so, yeah, so, but about 4 or 5 weeks before we were going to go, Emma realised she probably practically couldn't come until the second half, so she came for the six to 12 months.
Right.
So I was fine, but I had to kind of have that conversation with my parents. I was like, I'm going by myself. And so they dropped me off. I had my braces taken off about 3 weeks before. They dropped me off at Heathrow and, you know, I got it wrong queue. My dad was like, oh, how are you going to get round the world? You can't even get to
we'll
dropping
never see
your bag
her again.
Off. You can't drop your bag off. Oh, your mum's going to be worried. That's all I kept saying. Your mum's going to be worried sick. And I'd look at her and she'd be like, I won't. Your dad. Your dad is. And it was right. You know, it was before... mobile phones.
Yeah.
It was before, I didn't have a mobile phone. It was before, it wasn't before them, but it was before everyone owned them.
Yeah.
It was before email. I set up my email and made sure all my mates had an email. And then they all went to uni. So they got these, so everyone got their uni email. But that was the first time we'd had email addresses.
Yeah.
I had a phone card that I could reverse charge. Sometimes, like, once I really got into it, like, travelling and wasn't so homesick, I rang maybe once every, like, 2 or 3 weeks. They would always hear from me at least once a week, but...
Just to know.
Yeah, but now, can you imagine? I mean, you just... And I thought I'd come up with this really amazing idea. I came up with Instagram. Right. And I was like, I can remember sitting and like chatting to some random people that were probably bored shitless of me because I was 18 and the first place I went was America. I wasn't allowed in a pub. I wasn't allowed anywhere. It was an amazing place and I loved it, but it was hard coming from working in a pub in Yorkshire to then not even kind of being allowed in one, but, you know, so I was like, oh, okay, because this is me being an adult, like I've left home. So there was a lot of, like, sitting in coffee shops, but that was, you know, like coffee shops there was this culture and it was really safe and it's an amazingly liberating thing, I think, to have for women, not now, but when they first started being the norm, because... Sitting in a bar is a very different thing. If you just want to, you know, sit in a bar with a drink by yourself, reading, more than likely someone has more drinks and gets a bit more confident, you're going to have to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they recognise you or not. I just mean in general. But the brilliant thing about this kind of revolution of the coffee shop is just like that, you know, teenagers can go sit, anyone of any age, like you can be sat next to people from all walks of life in a coffee shop. And when now we're travelling, you do have that thing where you just speak to people and you chat and you discover things. And you know, for me, it was, I went to internet cafes and stuff and kind of like got back in touch and did say, yeah, I am alive. But I didn't have this like way of going, oh, I'm in the world. And so I remember telling someone, I've got this really great idea. So you know in Beauty and the Beast, the mirror. So the Beast has this mirror, right? And then whatever he wants to look at, he says, you know, you tell the mirror and it shows you. I'm going to invent something that is like that so that wherever you are, everyone can see you. That's Instagram. I can't believe it. It is Instagram. I'd stand on a cliff and be in like Byron Bay and just, there's no cliffs in Byron Bay, but like, you know, you'd be stood on a beach or you'd be make these amazing friends and you'd be stood like on Ayers Rock and like, I just want to text the picture, but there's no texting picture. Yeah. So it's not even a part of your mindset. You just want to go, I really want someone from home to see this. But weirdly, it's probably the most present I could have ever been because at 18 now, I would be gadgeted up to the nines. I'd have a GoPro, I'd have everything. And there'd be nothing to come home and share because it would have been immediately shared. And I might not see it because I might be watching it through something.
And also you see it in a different way when you look at it through that perspective.
I can remember, actually, we got to the top of Ayers Rock because Emma had flown out at that point, so that was 6 months in, so she came to Australia. And we got up Ayers Rock, and you're like, pulling up these ropes. You know, as 18-year-olds, we were very unfit. And we got to the top, and as we got there, this Irish guy was like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. We're like, isn't it beautiful? He went, no, I've got two bars. And he got this, like, Nokia, you know, the banana one that he pulled out. He went, can't wait. And he spent ages trying to ring someone and then didn't get through. But it was just this thing. And we were like, wow, he's got signal. Like, because this thing was so exciting to us. But like now, everyone up there would be going, beep, 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 beep. I'm on Ayers Rock.
Have a look at that. Have a look at
can
you see that?
It? Babe, I'm FaceTiming. Oh. I'll send you a WhatsApp. So yes, it was ace. But I got a lot of compliments for going backpacking. Really, all I did was eat. I chubbed up. I was such a little pudding when I got home. My brother has never laughed so much as when I got off the plane. Because, like, they hadn't really seen me. Because I sent a few photos back, and then as I started to really whack on the way, I didn't send the photos back. And then I was like, I really hope I get some kind of, like, sickness in the last couple of weeks. And I didn't.
Come on, dysentery.
Didn't get it. Absolutely fine. The stomach of a cow. And I got off and I was like, hiya. And they were like, oh, all right.
Good time.
Met a friend. Have you eaten your friend? I was like, oh, no, it's just, you know, I've got water retention. I've got water retention from the flight. It was a really long flight. But I came out with no tan. Nothing. Like, so I wore a T-shirt. I was so young, though. I was still, like, in the pool in a T-shirt because I didn't want to get burned. Such a kid. And, like, got back and, like, so then it was brilliant. But I basically, everyone was like, oh, we're so proud of you, you know. I was like, I'm basically hungover. So I'm just hungover.
For a year.
And I've eaten a lot of food. And it was brilliant.
But were you good in those first 6 months before Emma came out? Were you good at being by yourself, even though you were talking to other people?
And I'm not good at it now. It's something I want to develop as an adult. I'm waiting to become grown up. I'm not great at being by myself.
Have time by yourself?
Yeah. I crave it, and I have it, and do all the things you shouldn't do, like ring someone.
But you don't necessarily like it?
No, like I think, oh, I just really want 5 minutes to myself. I just need, you know, and then I have it. Like, say you go in your trailer. I mean, my door's never closed. It's always open, and then I bullet everyone into coming for lunch.
Yeah.
Because I cannot do that. But then at home, if I'm just, like, got 5 minutes to myself, I have to be doing something I cannot just sit and be in my own company.
But would you?
I just don't think we get on. We don't. We have a lot of arguments. We have massive arguments. I just think sometimes myself annoys me so much. I just think I like doing stuff. So I can be in the house if I'm like, or I can be by myself, but I need to be doing something. Like I've run a couple of marathons. So that training were ace because if I've got really little ears and the thingies fall out, so I couldn't train with music. So I spent two trainings for the however many weeks, the 16 weeks you do it, doing like 4-hour runs with no music and just me making up stories. Like, I'd do this one that were ace that I had medicine. Like I was in, like, Lord of the Rings and I had to carry this medicine. And I'd just do that. And I'd be thinking, oh, I'm nearly there. Or someone's chasing me. Or, like, stuff like that. I just would make up stories. And that was the only time, and I messed up my ankle, so I can't do running anymore. But up until running was a time when I would go out and I would have no phone, no nothing.
But
and
a
I would
clear just, focus.
Yeah, but it was. But there was a beginning and an end, and yeah. I was slightly distracted because I was running. So there was, you know, every 2 seconds you're thinking about crossing the road or have I got enough water? Shall I go get my Lucozade spot? Yeah, or shall I just wait? When am I timing this drink stop? You know, just stuff like that. But sitting and being comfortable in your skin or going to a cottage somewhere.
But you're not one that goes, oh, I'm just going to take myself off to the pictures by myself and just...
I could do that. Right. I can sit in the cinema. But everything that has a time frame and everything that has... I like being an audience to summit. So if it's been at a gig... I've been to gigs by myself. Like, I look like I can...
Producer Griff there, the only way he likes to go to gigs is by himself, isn't it? You love going to gigs by himself.
You've got that look about you.
Yeah.
You don't look like someone to me who, when a big group of people stand right next to you, you're going to go, hey, guys, you're going to go...
It irks him.
Or people who sing along.
I don't feel like I can respond to these allegations.
Well,
this is the first time he's ever spoken on the podcast. I refer to him all the time. He never speaks.
Sorry, I'm cutting deep. But I am that person that goes, I want to be as loud as the singer throughout the entire gig. So proud of myself. I've even learned the B-sides. There's no secret track coming from me.
I'm a super fan, right? Yeah.
So anything like that, but just the... Everyone I meet goes, you really benefit from meditating. And so I know I would be...
So you would?
Yes. Yeah. Like my personality, that kind of ping pong brain and a million mile an hour.
Do you feel you're on all the time? Are you aware that you're on?
Yeah. And because I don't really like the feeling of not. So I'm not very, I'm not very good at chilling out. So even, you know, on holiday... I was, right, should we do a make-believe story, right, guys? Come on. And, like, every 10 minutes, I can sit and read because I love reading. And that requires a focus and a stillness. But I'm immersed in something, so I'm not with myself.
Yeah. Can you have other things on? Like, I can't have the radio on or any music if I'm reading. I have to
Yeah, I'm absolutely like that because I'm like...
Because otherwise my focus is going, I've just heard something on the radio there, or I've just heard that piece of music.
Yeah,
and also I'll put my phone
on silent, because there's just no point. But, yeah, it's a funny one. It's like, it's a trait that's probably been a little sister. You've always had someone around. I've always been lucky, got groups of friends, and I've got my girlfriends from growing up, and a couple of lad mates that we grew up together and we're still friends and we still see each other. So I'm an ensemble person. I've always worked better in an ensemble, which is why it's the dream career for me because of that thing. And that's why I don't necessarily have any interest in the singularness of it sometimes, like in the, you know, especially on this job, if I'm doing a job like Doctor Who, the show is named after the character you're playing, but it's the most ensemble piece I've ever done in so many ways because of all the other extra departments I've never worked with. I've never worked really with that many prosthetics and SFX and VFX and all those things. And I think the myth, isn't it, is that if you're the lead in something, it's like a singular achievement.
Yeah, or sometimes it can be quite lonely.
Well, yeah. But on this, it's a massive group thing. But every job that I've really been in has always been like that. It's been sometimes like one-on-one, you know, like with something like Venus, it was like duologues.
Yeah.
But it's always the crew, or it's always the stage management, or, you know, whoever. It's always everyone else. And I love the fact that I've got a very flitty brain, so I love the fact that you can be sat chatting here, but then, you know, someone from makeup who's hilarious has rocked up, so you've got like your 15-minute chat there, or that everything is a new direction all the time. And I think if that doesn't suit your personality, I think this industry is quite hard often for people, because it requires a lot of you, whereas I think I struggle to go to the other thing, which is like the quiet times, which and as necessary, because I can't sit still. And so I love the craziness of the work, and I don't burn out from it, because that's where I'm kind of more comfortable in a group. Like, yeah, my group of mates, being all with my family, all like sat one-on-one chatting, but certainly not, I'm just going to take myself away. I'm not that person. Unless I'm like, I really don't know my lines.
I'll be 10 minutes.
I've got a really long word that I've never, ever seen before.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Is this made up? Oh, no, it's an actual term. Brilliant. I feel really
So how did you cope with that 6 months then, when you were away?
Hiya, I'm Jodie. Where are you from?
Oh, yeah.
Hiya. Where are you going? Oh, yeah, no. I'm not doing it today. Yeah, I'm not doing it today. Okay, brilliant, thanks. I just did like loads of stuff like that. Like I met groups and you end up travelling. There's loads of people as well from all over the world. Mm. There wasn't a lot of 18-year-olds, I have to say. It was interesting. There weren't a lot of 18-year-olds who had a similar upbringing to me from the UK that were travelling at that time. I think I met a lot of people who'd had, in not a criticism to mine or a criticism to them, but I was through state school and stuff like that. There wasn't many people at that time travelling who were 18 and like gone through state school. There were a lot of private school kids travelling in doing like the kind of gap year before they were going to their uni places.
As in that's their rite of passage. Well, that's always what they do.
Well,
yeah,
but,
I know
but,
what you
but,
mean.
But and it and so a lot I met loads of people my age like that, but I always was quite surprised. I was like, oh yeah, it's not like I bumped into anyone from Leeds that's like, you know, like, oh yeah, doing the same thing. You'd meet 21-year-olds or 25-year-olds or people that were just doing it a bit later, but 18, me and Emma were kind of a bit unusual for that. But that's just because, you know, I was really lucky. Like my mum and dad bought my ticket, you know, like I'd saved, but I had a lot of help because I could. And at that time, the world wasn't as small. You know, it's 18 years ago, so it's still very much like the ticket is terrifying. Whereas now, like, plane tickets are really expensive, but actually weirdly, like, you look at, say, like, flying from LA to New York and you could get that for, like, $100, you know, whereas these tickets were like finding the gold in the chocolate bar, you know. So I'd just meet people and chat and met people from all over the world, but then also just loads of Brits, which is just hilarious. And you ended up, you know, you'd hire a van. We had five of us hired a van around New Zealand and drove around New Zealand. Like, and then I got to Australia and my sister-in-law came out and Emma came out, and then my sister-in-law stayed for like 4 weeks and went home, and Emma stayed then for the next 6 months, and we did Australia and Southeast Asia. So I'd done all the kind of, I did America, Rarotonga, New Zealand, and then with someone like permanently did Australia and Southeast Asia. And it was incredible. And at the time, I don't think I really was aware how incredible it was, but I've always been confident in an alien environment, to excuse the pun. But, and that's probably because you just have to be when you're on an Amtrak at 4 o'clock in the morning by yourself, and you've got to stay awake because you need to get off at the right stop. And if you don't, it's actually quite a disaster. You know, like in like, dad, mum, you know, it's like you've got to have that kind of awareness. I think it made me very independent in the right age, because I then was about to move down to London.
Do you feel you're more independent after that year?
Because
right.
Because it's like a it's like a bandage pull, because it's not like going to uni. It's a year abroad.
Yeah.
So it's not any less, it's not harder or not as hard or whatever. I wonder what's going on.
Someone's having the Friday Big Shop down the street.
I'll stream a scum while it's noisy. It was more like, it was like you could come home at weekend if you're a bit overwhelmed or homesick. I was so homesick in the first week that I sat in bookshops reading England, Lonely Planet.
Did you?
Yeah, reading like all about Yorkshire.
Did not exacerbate the situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, a schoolgirl error. Yeah. Like, absolutely, yeah. So I just, but then, you know, you get used to it and you have these experiences that are amazing and you know you wouldn't be getting. So, and then I just had this kind of confidence of, if I turn up at a bus station and everything is in a different language and I don't speak any other language, I can attempt to work it out.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to, whereas now there is so many people you can rely on to get you through things. And I think also with our job, if you go anywhere, you're chaperoned and all that kind of stuff, it's like, oh, no, I'm all right.
Yeah.
You know, you sometimes have to remind people, like, oh, no, I'm 36, I'll be right. I can check in. You know, everyone's being lovely and helping you, but you're like, no, honestly, I will make it. I'm not gonna sit in the gate and miss the flight to wherever we're filming.
Yeah.
I will make it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not travelling and flying and being away from home in for every kit. And being forced to do it would have been a disaster on a personality, but craving it and doing it was...
And also because it was always part of your plan.
It was part of my plan. And then I got back and then I got a couple of jobs straight away and I saved for a year because I was going to go to drama school and I did.
So you saved for another year.
So then I got back at 19. I worked in a pub and a residential home for elderly and I worked for a year and then started auditioning for drama school in January and I got in May. So then I knew that I would go in September. So then that summer, me and my life is back home. My girlfriends who had not done gap years had done, like, going to uni.
Yeah.
We went to Indonesia for 6 weeks. Like, so we'd all, like, saved and said, right, this is it. Like, we're going to be growing up soon. It's so funny, isn't it? Like, 20. Because they were going into their, like, last year, whereas I was obviously...
Starting.
Oh, no, they were going into their second year and I was going into my... first year, but still it's like the end in sight because when you graduate, that's it. We can't have these fun times.
It's all going to change.
It's all going to change. We're going to be so grown up. So we just like went to Indonesia. So I've done a lot of travelling for a very young age.
Yeah.
So I've been spoilt. And then we work, you get to go to cool places, don't you?
I know.
Best bit. That and meeting people.
I was talking to somebody about it the other day going, yeah, and I mean, I never fancied going to that place, but doing what we do, we go, oh my God, I get to go there. And I go, well, I'm going there because it's part of the job, but I'm not that.
Belfast.
Exactly.
Oasis Belfast.
Amazing.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I did a film there. I love it. I absolutely love it. Been some really good gigs there. Just brilliant.
And the people.
But it wasn't like I didn't want to go. I just had never been. And there'd never been an event to take me there. And then I got there and was there for 6 weeks and had an incredible time. Or like going to Dorset for Broadchurch. I was like, are these cliffs real? I can't believe this. Why is no one talking about these cliffs? Like, I've never heard of them. Like, I felt like there'd been some like national secret about these bloody cliffs. I was like, I can't believe that we've got a Jurassic Coast and I've never heard of it. That's just because you've had a terrible education. Oh, all right. It's not some secret. But, you know, stuff like that. Or really lucky, you go, you know, into an entirely new culture and everything. Yeah.
Well, that was me when I went to India and I never planned.
What, were you working or travelling?
Working.
Go on, I'm being really dumb. What did you do?
Just play.
Oh, cool.
I know. But it's complicity, so they get they have to
look at you.
They have to do that tour because that's how they make the money.
No, that's amazing
because
though.
Over here, they're kind of revered, but they're queuing around the block, like, you know, around the world.
Yeah. I bet that was incredible.
It was amazing, but I was never. India was never really on my list.
Why?
I don't know.
It's
I don't
on
know.
Everyone's list.
But then when I went there, I just completely fell in love. Bangs, Mike. Completely fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And the culture, and because we moved around to different places in India, I thought, and that was a point when I went. I was quite young, and I went, "How lucky!
Yeah,
how lucky are we that we get this?
Yeah, I know.
We get that opportunity. I can get to." Do something what I love and also get to experience this.
I know.
And this can only enrich my life.
We filmed in South Africa for on Doctor Who, and we ended up in these locations that you as a tourist just wouldn't go, because why would you know about them?
Yeah.
And these location scouts had found these extraordinary landscapes, and you just stood there like, how are we doing this? Like, we're all grown-ups. This is the thing for kids who, you know, for dreaming and wishing, and we're here now, and it's really warm, and it was January, so we knew we were got it good, because everyone else has got
freezing.
Flu. And the sun was actually out. It was beautiful weather, but in like a kind of landscape that you can't even describe, because it's just so beautiful and epic. And I think that is the thing about filming that you sometimes don't get when you go on holiday or when you go backpacking, is that the off the beaten track is hard if you are not very self-sufficient, because, you know, you fall down and you hurt your leg on a cliff or something, like, you know, you can put yourself in danger. Whereas obviously when you're filming but you're off the beaten track, all these other people put in all this hard work to make a road really easy for you to get to. So by the time you rock up, it's just, you only get the joy of it.
Yeah.
And it's a funny one, isn't it? Like, I don't, it's not like you can't moan, because there are some bits to work and to everybody's job in any field and everyone's life that you're just like, are you kidding? But
yeah, because everybody has bad days.
Everyone has bad days, and there's also, there's downsides to everything, but I have to say, like, we are so jammy, aren't we? It is ace. When you are lucky enough to be working, it is ace for stuff like that, for going to places and to have these experiences that are so short, and they're just banked.
But so intense.
They're so intense. They're with people that you might not ever see again, but you can bank them, and they're there for you and for life and for when we're all doddery in our little nana homes, monologuing at some poor girl. I know you don't know this, but
there was this time.
I was this girl, doctor.
But isn't it funny, because you were saying about, God, you feel like a kid and you're there and you're in this place and you're playing. But that's how we started.
Hello.
Just dressing up and wanting to play.
Yeah.
So we can't lose that. Because if we lose that, it all becomes a bit too serious and something else takes over.
I know, and it also gets a bit self-conscious or a bit. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's like when, you know, like this whole thing now of like learning through play. It's like, well, I could have told you that. I wish that ethos had been around when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because, like, of course, if you give me a cup of tea, if I drink the cup of tea, I can tell you much more about it than if I looked at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
But I think, had I not been supported in my decision to go into acting, I have no idea what I would have done, because I had no other skills. Like, I'm not academic in any way. So,
no.
And school, the way school was taught when I was younger, which is that I talk, you listen, and somehow, somewhere, some bit's going to go in.
Yeah.
That did, no.
You
it
have
didn't.
That, you have that photocopied sheet that I've just been to the staff room for. Read that, stick it in your book.
Yeah, why don't you just highlight the bit you want me to learn?
Yeah, just tell me.
Just tell me the bit you want me to learn. But yeah, so it just, and so then on this, it's like a continual education, isn't it? Because it's like that thing, I've got a real chip on my shoulder, I'm always like, oh, I'm not very bright. But I am bright, I'm just not academic.
But it's completely different.
It is completely different, but you don't know that when you're younger, do you?
But also, I suppose when you're younger, you can't even hold your hand up and go, no, I'm not academic. It does make you feel, certainly made me feel stupid. I would never put my hand up in a class for fear of getting something wrong. And then when someone shouted it out and I went, oh no, I did know that answer.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm not as stupid as what I thought was.
Yeah.
But then you put a play in my hand and then I can do something else. And,
yeah.
But you don't have that awareness or confidence, I suppose, when you're that young, do you?
I think as well, what I miss as well with work, because I haven't done a play for ages, and the thing that's so brilliant about theatre is, in rehearsal, you can, like, the aim sometimes in a whole rehearsal room is to do it wrong, is to just try something that might not work, but it's hard, isn't it, with filming, and particularly the stuff we film, which is quick.
Well, it is, because you don't have the time.
You've got to get it, I'm really technical now in the sense of, I know my window of getting it right, so I've got to get there quick.
Yeah.
Whereas now, because I haven't done a play since 2012, and it is that thing of relearning how to not try and get it right straight away. Like, because what's the point? Like, you've got, because it might be right for that one time, but yeah. try something else.
Yeah.
It's hard to retrain your brain out of that when you've done filming a lot.
But it's proper different, though, isn't it? It's
yeah.
right. Because I went for a theatre audition for the first time in donkeys, like a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it was only afterwards that I went, oh, God, I just treated that like I was going in for a...
Did you learn it?
No.
No, because you don't, do you?
No.
And that makes me nervous not learning it, because I'm so used to having to learn my sides.
Yeah.
And, like, learning for a screen audition.
But I was going, oh, no, I just want to make sure that I'm not too married to anything and I can just sort of make sure I play about with it, even though I've made these decisions. And then something happened and it just kind of really threw me. And then I went afterwards, I'm kind of treating it like it's a completely different process.
Yeah, it's weird,
isn't
it?
You've got to retrain that as well. But yeah, that is the thing about time, though. You know, when you're filming and if it's really intense and it's not just you, maybe there's like loads of different departments going off at the same time and you know you've got to get
and
that.
And the sun's going down.
And you're going, right, come on now.
I know. Or you're on someone's child hours and you're about to lose like half your cast or something. I know. It's frustrating, isn't it, being always at the mercy of the job opportunities you're given sometimes, because it is like we are really creative people but I certainly don't create my own work in that sense. Like, I don't write. I haven't directed anything. You doing this must be such a massive outlet, because it's under your time frame. It's your space and it's within your rhythm. And sometimes, like, we have to just adjust everything about ourselves to, like, shoehorn into whatever you're going on to, which is brilliant and means nothing's boring, ever. But it can be a bit, I don't know, what's the word? It, like, leaves you slightly hanging out to dry sometimes, doesn't it? Because you don't quite know. It's like you're floating. You never quite...
Should you feel that we all have that lack of control?
Well, yeah, it's like, I'm a huge control freak, but... To a certain extent, but then I'm not, because you can't be in this job.
You
don't know what you're doing next week.
And also, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's also impossible to know if they're going to use that take from that if you're filming.
Also, I have to say, like, I'm not really aware. I never watch it back unless it's suggested that I should because of, you know,
if you're filming, like, technical reasons. Yeah, no, I would never watch anything back. I was talking to somebody not so long ago. And they were much, much younger, and I'd only been doing it a few years, full of confidence, like mass confidence. Not arrogance, but like super, super confident. And I would never be like that now, let alone back then. But would leg it round to the monitor after every take to watch. Now, I find that really unhealthy.
I couldn't do it just because for my own sake, I just think...
But doesn't it become something else then? What are you looking for?
Well, because you're not, like you say, you're not going to edit it. Also, everything always, it's like that ain't, it's going to be cut into somebody, like, and there's going to be a soundtrack and it's going to be great. I can't watch stuff that's in the mix either. Like,
no, because it's too raw.
Yeah, like obviously with ADR and things, you've got to, but I really have to kind of zone out to watching it because... It can devastate me sometimes. And then you see it, and you're like, oh, it's amazing.
That's completely different to what.
And also you forget, like, there's someone else in the scene who's it's probably going to be on them, and it should be.
Yeah.
Like, it's what they're doing is a bolder choice than this weird thing that I've decided and I've stuck with and I've committed to. But also, like, I've worked with a few directors that I think would have said not to do that as well. I think some people would be like, don't keep watching the monitor.
Yeah.
But like, some people, like, they'd be a bit... Because also for playbacks...
I think most...
Clapperload has got a lot to do. He doesn't want to always be pressing rewind.
I know, exactly.
He's getting his lenses.
What does it become,
running around trying to, like, carry kit. Like, it's hard, like...
And they've been here a lot longer than you have.
Yeah.
Does it become... Is it a vanity thing?
I don't know, though, because for some people it's a benefit to them. I think that's the thing. It's so individual, isn't it? I ain't got a clue. I think I must have a way of working, but then I wouldn't know what my way of working is.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like, some people, like, have things they do.
Yeah.
Like, I have my, like, few little things that I do, but I don't have, like... If a director comes in, particularly on something like Broadchurch or Doctor Who, where... you are playing the character and a director comes into it rather than you starting with that director from the start. And so you've maybe decided certain things about your character or whatever. I still am, like, if I'm directed in a completely different way, they want to try a different way of rehearsing or something like that, I'm absolutely fine, because I don't think I have this very set way that it has to go. But that might be really naive. I probably do have loads of habits.
But do you mean that you're much more...
I just think I like change all the time, mate.
So
I like
much more instinctive than
cerebral.
Intellectual.
Oh my God, 100%. Which has been a really interesting way into this part, because it's one of the most intelligent characters anyone could ever play.
Yeah.
With a hindsight that you can't even imagine, and also an optimism and an ability to continue to learn that isn't very British in that kind of, you know, like, in, not to say human, but, you know, like, with, as adults here, we go, you inevitably, life affects you. So you go, well, that'll never happen, will it? Or, well, that'll happen. You know, you have a predestined judgment that I can't speak for everyone, but I certainly will be a bit more jaded than the child version of myself, whereas this character is continually discovering new things all the time and allows that new thing to be taken in and processed and not to bring previous judgment to that new scenario, which is hard as a human trait. We do that because that's survival as well a lot of the time. But my non-cerebral way in, even though it can be kind of very... I suppose the language can certainly be very intellectual in that sense. It's to still make them all pictures. So if everything is an image, and if everything is me within that image or the people I'm with within that image, I can understand exactly what I'm saying or I'm doing, and I'll still listen because you might move in a way that you didn't before. So the picture's continually changing.
Yeah.
It's like if I get a word or the name of a planet or something that is brand new to me and is brand new to the show. And
to possibly
anybody.
I have to
basically give it its own film in my head.
Right.
And everything to do with that has its own colours and everything, so that every word associated with that has a picture. I'm more like a kid's picture book in the way my brain works than a dictionary. So it's that everything is images, and then whatever happens in that. So if you run in and start saying something, or on the next take you don't quite do it like that, the picture's changing, but it doesn't throw me because you're still within the picture.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
No, it does make sense. I'm totally with you, because I'm not from there.
I'm from there.
We're just
like,
if the top it's of the... a podcast. So you can't, I was pointing at my head, and Jodie was pointing at a chest.
No, you
pointing,
said you're not your head.
I'm not,
neither
I'm not
of us
my
are head. You're
and
your
I
gut.
Said I'm sort of gut, and
I'm like
and
my
Jodie's
chest,
sort of
more like kind of like that rising
from esophagus downwards.
Yeah. So it's like that.
But, has it always been like that?
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever had to think about it before. Never did this job, because most roles have always been kind of heavily emotional. Or,
yeah.
So I've never really thought about it, because it was a fear for me of my way in. I just thought, am I going to be able to play this role because it requires this other part of my brain that I don't use? So,
is that ever a worry, like a serious worry?
Yeah, but I think it's a worry with any job, isn't it? But on this, I was just really nervous of... Was I going to be able to do was I going to be able to sound like I inhabited every word that I said, in the sense of could I bring alive all this science and time and metaphor and all these things? Because I'm generally the one in the show that maybe describes it. So,
right. Okay.
So it was that, because that's never been required of me before. Usually I'm going, why don't you love me anymore? Oh, please tell me this is not more horrific bad news. Those are usually my roles. So that's all that was the worry is, I suppose. It's like the gobbledygook stuff.
Yeah.
It's all that.
But it's also like, you know...
And it's like that. another thing you can't say, rubbing your tummy and patting your head.
Yeah.
It's that a lot of the time, because you can be saying one thing but doing something else, and everyone else in the scene is talking about something completely different, and the doctor just has this completely individual journey a lot of the time that's very much a part of an ensemble, but that requires a different part of me as an actor than I've had to do before.
And did that come easily, do you think?
Well, it's no, but I don't think this job would come easy. I just don't think there's certain jobs in there that you do that come easy, and there's certain ones that don't. And it doesn't not come easy.
Because there's got to be a certain part of it that's
so
that,
much fun.
That come easy.
But the energy of it really comes easy. I love the bouncing from topic to topic and the kind of energy that's required to drive through scenes or through the story. But it's rewardingly hard, because every night you go home and the next day is your big day as well. And that's the bit I'm not used to. So I'm used to having like...
What, that every day is a big day?
Well, yeah, I'm used to like going in and it being like, oh, so Monday and Tuesday are pretty light. I'm not in on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday's a big day.
Yeah.
But this, every day is the big day. And for 9 months, that's quite...
Yeah,
I've never played that before, so I've never done that.
For anybody, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I'm sure it happens to loads of people a lot, but it's just never happened to me. So I think that was the thing that was overwhelming, was I going to always be on top of the lines, essentially? The lines are the hardest thing, apart for it, is learning them, and learning them so much so that you can do all the other stuff, which is like the props as well, and enjoy it. But I have to, it's ace. It's really ace.
And so you were enjoying it, but you were still sort of juggling at the same time.
Well, yeah, you're juggling all the time and you're kind of like spinning plates, but it's brilliant in it for that, because for every job you do, you know, like for you, they can't really be compared. No job is like better than the other, but every job is different. But while you're in every job, you think it's better than every job you've ever done. You know, you always think that. And I think I'm very much in that bubble. But it's just because it's like no other for me. I've never done all like this, and it's so much fun. And I think I've probably for like 10, 15 years always played parts that are very, not always, but quite heavily emotional.
Yeah.
And I'm not method, so I don't stay in character in between scenes and takes. But you have an energy throughout a day if you pretty much know that most of your scenes are kind of blah. And it kind of like, you don't really realise how much it can kind of spill out into life.
Yeah.
So then, like, now playing someone who's really hopeful and positive and energized, bloody hell, I'm bounding all over the weekend. I'm like, hey, what are we doing? Should we do this? It's like, my WhatsApps have like gone down from like 4 minutes of, I just can't believe it. I just can't believe that I'm absolutely knackered. And you never guess what's happened. Proper moaning minute. No, bye. Like that. And so I just think you just don't realize how much it runs into everything always. But that's, you know, that's a good thing as well.
It's a positive thing.
Yeah, it's a really good thing.
Absolutely.
But it's a really good thing in the other sense as well, because it means that it matters. You can't phone in. You know, it's like you can't just do a scene and phone it in.
No.
Because someone, even if you haven't lived through it, someone else has.
But you strike me that somebody, whether you were playing Doctor Who or someone, you always care. You seem to...
Yeah, I do.
I
really
would have thought you really,
really
care about
also,
what
you do. I'm not technical enough to... I'm not very technical. So it's like when things like... People make me laugh about, you know...
In what
like
way?
Crying and stuff.
Yeah.
Go on then, cry. Can you cry? You know, stuff like that. And you're like, oh my God. I was like, I can't cry unless I'm upset. So sometimes in scripts, and I've been very often for lasses, it'll say burst into tears. What? Why? Why am I bursting into tears?
Yeah.
I don't understand. I will if it's upsetting. And then it's like in the moment, it's like, oh, I think she'd be more emotional. Well, she ain't. So,
yeah,
and she's emotional.
Yeah.
So it in. But sometimes when I'm not supposed to have been quite, I think there was a scene towards the end of episode one of Broadchurch, and it said like one of the lines was, and we shot it quite late on as well, but it was like, I don't know what's wrong. It's like I'm numb. I can't seem to process it and cry. Something like that. I can't seem to cry because I don't know if I process it.
Sorry, these were the lines?
The lines were in a later scene in episode one.
Right.
We shot all the early stuff, like of them discovering the body of Danny on the beach, like day one.
Right.
So it was being told by the police. Ah, absolutely lost. Like I couldn't. I think maybe I was supposed to be numb and in shock and all those kind of things that are very real for people. But just the minute I saw the blue lights flashing, I'd absolutely gone. I'd completely gone, and they hadn't even turned over because the camera, like, there was like, it were a handheld and it were at the door. So it followed Andy from door getting David and Olivia and walking in. And that day one of the entire like 5 month thing and coming in and back time, like cameras got to us. I just absolutely lost it. And like, she's not a little girl now, but Charlie, who plays a daughter in it, just like these big eyes, like looking at me and Andy, like, just in the sense of just loads of grown-ups crying.
Yeah.
And then Olivia were nagging her eyes, you know, as the police detective, like, nagging her eyes. And you just, it's funny because it's like, it ain't real for any of us. We go home and it ain't real at all. But the crying is because we're upset.
Yeah.
It ain't like, I think one of you burst into tears now. It's like, oh, I'm not that person.
Yeah.
If it ain't upsetting, I'm not going to cry. But if it is upsetting, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be, I can't like.
And it might take me a bit of time to get it back.
Well, I can't kind of, yeah, I can't kind yeah. of, I'm really crap at like then coming back. And you know, it's particularly when work, when you've had maybe the start of the scene is positive to the end. And so then when it's like all reset and you're like, okay.
Like, give me a few minutes.
Yeah, just give me a few. Yeah. Yeah. And definitely like a couple of them in like, Black Mirror, I think, that I was just like, wow, surely my eyes are just fat now and bright red.
Yeah, I can't see through them.
I can't see all.
Nothing.
I've got a massive rash all down my cheeks.
All this red stuff.
Oh, you know, and it's just, but it's just like, to me, I'm just like, well, you know, just funny questions of what do you find hard or whatever. The weirdest thing for me is like, I find laughing really hard because when stuff ain't funny, how hard is it to fake laugh?
And also, you know you're fake laughing, and it's, I can't even sound like a fake laugh.
It's awful, but that's the only time really when you have to kind of phone it in the actual thing, innit? Because like, if you're upset, generally what you're filming is upsetting, so you can be upset. But like, if you've got to find,
you can think of something, like,
life's been brutal enough in certain moments to go there. But oh, like, you know, just they all laugh at that. Oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I did a thing in America, like an American show that we shot in Lithuania, and there was all Brits, and there was one American in our team, and we were an ensemble of like CIA agents, and something really positive happened, and he went, yeah, like that. And he was like, no, and as the only American, he was like, you cannot respond like that. We all went, woo. Like I went, like, clapped or something. He went, no, 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 no. And my, you know, half my family are American, so I know that it's, like, really positive and expressive and wonderful, like, affirming emotion in that sense of, like, if they feel it, they say it, and, they, you know, it's a huge, sweeping statement. But, like, you know, like, if it's, like, excitement, it's like, yeah. You know, like, have you ever been to a comedy gig there? What? I mean, they get clapped all the time.
What, in America?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to one in New York.
Oh, my God, everyone's like, woo! I'm like, oh, my God, they'd be getting... I can't... I could probably do... I was like, I'm thinking, I wonder if I should try stand-up. Like, I suddenly felt like really confident. Like, I think I might try stand-up because I'm absolutely hilarious. And I think here is my place. But everyone's supportive and they're like, it's like that... Like, woo, we did it. And like, rather than nose lock going, no, it's all right. Yeah, no, I'm pretty chuffed with that. I'm pretty chuffed. So we had to like really find this like, yeah. And oh, awful, awful. To the point where I think I will probably cut out of that scene. And I think it was me that like had the breakthrough. And I just kind of went, like a kind of flop arm punch. I just couldn't do it. Because I'm just too, I just find that kind of, fakeness really difficult. Not that that's fake in Americans. I'm saying when you have to,
but if you can't do it, you're judging yourself. Going, this is a bit.
When you
I
have
feel
to manufacture the laugh, or you have to manufacture the like, yeah, which is our job. So I should be able to do it, but I just really struggle with that one.
I know, but can't do everything.
So
what's the point?
Don't write anything that has lots of laughing in, and then cast me.
Do you get to have a break now?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a break, but it's quite full on. Like, the press is quite full on.
I'm sorry to add to that.
It's not press though. It's not even press.
I usually don't talk about jobs on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's all right. Really.
No, it's fine. But I'll make an exception. But I think it's really important because it's something very, very different to what you've been doing.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I'm just being serious.
All it is with this is that it's kind of like, it's like a bit of a moment in it. And also, I'm on my press junket tour, so I'm kind of... in that way of everything comes back to it at the moment.
Mm.
If I come back on the show in like 2 years, talk about loads of other stuff.
But is it nice not to talk about it for a bit? Because you kind of need a break, don't you?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, you know, it's like a slightly defining moment in my career, but it's not like, it's not, a slightly one. It is a massive moment in my career, obviously. But I suppose it's not like I came home and all my mates went, oh, nice to meet you. It's like, you are you.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That bit's like that bit that happens at work.
Yeah.
But you are still you to everyone else, and I'm still incredibly irritated. And I mean, just because other people let me get away with certain things, the other people in my life still don't, which really annoys me. I think now I'm a VIP. They'd let me be a bit more. It's like, oh, you so need it. I know. I've got really bad paranoia, and it really annoys me if you get a blue listen on a WhatsApp and no response. I know you've listened to it. It's got a blue microphone. You've listened.
I'm waiting.
I did it. I had to do it earlier. I was like, babe, are you annoyed? Babe, are you annoyed? And then left it. She checked it, then sent a message in the group WhatsApp we're in and didn't reply to that. So I just rang, because you're online. So I rang WhatsApp and I was like, babe, you didn't reply. And she was, this is one of my mates up north. And she was like, how are writing the answer in the group WhatsApp to the question that I'm organising? Like, I was like, okay, but are you annoyed? No. Got to go.
What about when you type something and then you see at the top that they're typing, or there's like little bubbles, you go, oh, they're typing a response. Then all of a sudden the response never come. They go, oh, so they wrote it.
And then didn't send it.
And then didn't send it. So what does that mean?
I know. My sister-in-law finds me exhausting. And yesterday I got a WhatsApp back that just said, that's 1:55 I will never get back. And she didn't answer the question. She didn't answer the question. Therefore, I had to send another WhatsApp with the same question. And then, as I was recording, she was going, oh, voice recording, because she could see voice recording. She was just typing it. Just stop recording, like, I've got an actual job. I'm a grown-up. I work. I was like, no. But so anyway, there'll be an end of this, because that's my favourite thing, is to chit-chat, and ask a question at the end, and then be like, you didn't even listen to the entire message, because there was a question at the end.
Jodie, I've loved talking to you. This has been brilliant. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I really did, but edit me nicely.
Well, I hope that didn't disappoint. It certainly didn't disappoint me. I loved spending time with Jodie. She's proper. She's honest, and she knows her roots. And more importantly, regardless of being the brilliant actor that she is and the weight that's probably on her shoulders right now, which didn't show, by the way, at all, she knows who she is. She seems really proud of who she is, and it's lovely. It's lovely to spend time with her. She's great crack. I'd happily have another episode with her. I'll just go out for a pint with her. She's the type of girl who's got, let's go out for a pint. She's brilliant. So, Jodie, thank you so much for spending time, because I know you were talking to so many journalists and they're probably asking questions about the female Doctor Who and those redundant, boring questions. Hopefully none of that came up in our conversation. I don't think it did. I loved it, and I hope you loved it too. So thank you so much for downloading and subscribing. And now look, if this is your first journey, is that right? If this is the first episode you've listened to with the Two Shot Podcast, go back through the back catalogue. There's loads of amazing and interesting people. Some you know, some you don't. You might know Vicky McClure. Do you know Susan Wacoma? Do you know Michael Balogun? Steve Evarts? Susan Lynch, Amanda Abington, to name but a very, very small handful of amazing people that we talk to week in, week out. Speaking of week in, week out, next week, right, we are doing 2 episodes in 1 week, okay? So we're going to do an episode Tuesday and an episode Thursday. I'm going to tell you right now, if you've been watching a BBC show called Wanderlust, with Steve McIntosh and Toni Collette. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And why is it so brilliant? Look, it's acted fantastically well. It's directed with subtlety and humour and in a very unpatronising way, okay? Very important. But it all started off with one man, and he's called Nick Payne. He's the creator, he's the writer. You might know him from some brilliant plays that he's done. But he's on Tuesday, and we get down to brass tacks. Because it's funny, the show's been received in a very mixed way. Is it mixed way the right way? Some people have really loved it, and I'm firmly in that camp. And some people have really loathed it. But we need to talk about why they've loathed it and why loving something and loathing something is actually a positive thing. So we talk about that. It's a brilliant episode. So if you're thinking about writing, or you think about writing or anything like that, or you just want a good conversation, that's what it's all about. Tuesday, Nick Payne, it's going to be a banger. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to let you know who's on Thursday. And if it's who I think it is, it's probably very, very, very not safe for work. Until then, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. You take care. I'll see you Tuesday for a change. See ya. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.